Welcome back. On this week's episode of the OIS podcast, Dr. Sharon Bakalash moderates a panel of ophthalmology experts on the topic of drug delivery methodology and strategies. Our guests include Drs. Jim Cunningham of Allergan, Reza Hawk of Santen, Joshua Horvath of Genentech, and Casey Kopchinski of Aerie Pharmaceuticals. Let's listen in.
So we are joined today by a representative of strategic pharma companies, Allergan, Santen, Genentech, and Aerie Pharmaceuticals, all companies that spread their portfolio across multiple disease areas. And I will let my fellow panel partners to introduce themselves.
Josh Horvath, I'm with Genentech. I'm part of our device and packaging development group, trained as an engineer, and I've worked in developing medical devices for the past 15 years, most of that time in ophthalmology.
Great. And I'm Casey Kopchinski, Chief Scientific Officer and co-founder of Aerie Pharmaceuticals. My PhD is in molecular cell biology, postdoc in neurobiology. I've spent my entire career really doing target discovery and drug discovery within biotech the last 15 years or so in ophthalmology.
Hi, Jim Cunningham. I lead the drug delivery sciences team at AbbVie, previously Allergan, based in Irvine, California, responsible for both formulation as well as combination product device development activities for delivery-enabled products. And, you know, across all therapeutic areas, all therapeutic modalities, but historically a lot of focus in eye care.
My name is Reza Hawk. I'm at Santen. The group I'm leading is called Ophthalmic Innovation Center in Global R&D. I'm an ophthalmologist by training almost 25 years plus. I'm at the industry in different companies like Novartis a long time. Then Shire, last one is the Shire, where I did the Xiidra approval. And last 2 years at Santen.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Drug delivery technologies are often designed to improve pharmacological and therapeutic properties of already approved drugs. While drug delivery technologies offer a relatively obvious way of tackling high unmet needs, like treatment burden reduction or creating lifecycle management solutions for existing products, it's still not widely adopted as a distinct strategy with many pharma companies, but rather looked upon opportunistically. So for today's discussion, I divided the timelines into four topics. We are going to start with the first topic, which is talking about the hurdles. And the questions are referred to you, to all of you, much like a presidential debate, but I hope in a more correct manner. So historically, pharmaceutical companies have been hesitant in either acquiring, developing, or investing in drug delivery technology. Why is that? Why do you think this is the case?
I think I can start there, and I'll take this from kind of the device and combination product perspective. You know, developing drugs, it requires a different set of skills than developing, you know, in particular mechanical devices. Oh, there is some overlap. If you look at my group within Genentech, our entire department is probably 70% mechanical engineering. That's not the majority of Genentech as a whole, right? It's more bioprocess and these sorts of things. So, you know, we don't always have all those capabilities in a pharma company until you get to a certain size and scale to do that stuff in-house. And then specifically in ophthalmology, I'd say, looking at the technologies over the past 10 years or so, the majority of the drug delivery technologies have failed. And they usually fail before they even get into the clinic. So while we might have the money to invest, we don't really have the manpower to invest in, you know, going through an endless list of ideas to try to figure out which ones will be successful. So we need our partners to do some of that legwork up front.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think the one of the keys for any drug delivery platform is there has to be some level of proof of concept. And preferably relatively advanced, you know, some lead that really demonstrates the power of the technology that should, you know, at least be clinic ready and preferably have some, at least some early clinical data associated with it. I think platform technologies in general are more challenging to value because you are trying to agree with a potential partner on what the future value is of products that perhaps have not even been contemplated yet. So oftentimes the deals that are done are really focused on single products that have been brought forward by the company that has a drug delivery platform. Now we have had the opportunity to invest in a platform, the PRIT platform for sort of large scale manufacturing of implants that we licensed from Invizia. And with the, and fully bought into the potential of using that to bring future products forward and allow us to leverage our small molecule chemistry at Aries. So it can be done on a platform basis, although I'll point out that even with the Invizia acquisition of that technology, they had a lead product that we're advancing in the clinic now, which is a dexamethasone-eluting implant.
The other thing I would add is that for traditional modalities, small molecules, therapeutic proteins, and especially outside of therapeutic areas where local delivery is often required, systemic administration, right, by oral dosing or injection is a really well-established path and often viewed as least risky. And I think, for that reason, many pharma companies will tend to emphasize innovation around the molecule, the NME. Obviously, application of novel delivery technologies add time, cost, and risk. But I think all that said, the added risk is justified in areas like eye care, where we're really focused on local delivery, and it's often required, where outcomes in real-world use are really limited by things like poor compliance. So I think that's a factor that's contributed to this dynamic as well.
Thank you, Sharon, and all the topics that we discussed. This is one of the most, I think, important topics in ophthalmology right now. As I mentioned to you, I'm 25 plus years here, and from the very beginning, I'm hearing these things of drug delivery, and nothing has been moved so far. Only the last one from Jim's group actually approved for glaucoma. I think there is some kind of convincing thing, and also let me start with a little bit back. Ophthalmology for last, I don't know, maybe 100 years moving eye drops. Nothing has been moving actually. So when drugs for back of the eye came, and that time they started thinking that, can you extend the time period, not giving monthly, can you give 6 months? Those things started that time, because for front of the eye diseases like glaucoma, dry eye, nobody actually is serious about that. But there is a potential space even in the front of the eye diseases, not only back of the eye. I think it's a time right now to find out what is the real platform. One of the challenges in the drug delivery is the kinetics of the drug. How long and what speed actually it will go into the surface of the eye or in the back of the eye. We don't know that very clearly yet. So we need some more research into that.
So considering the hurdles, and I'm hearing of different hurdles that played a role in both deciding and looking into drug delivery technologies, how can those be mitigated by working with smaller biotech companies? How can that be done in a larger company, biotech company relationship?
I could probably share some experience from a recent acquisition we had. Foresight Vision 4 was acquired a few years ago. And one of the key things we did there was try to keep that group intact, in the first few years after the acquisition. We even kept the separate site where that team worked. Kind of bringing a technology in sometimes requires you to leave it alone for a while and let it to continue to develop on its own. But even almost 4 years after that acquisition, we still have several engineers on my team that are working on sort of extensions of that technology for the future. That's one key part. So, kind of understanding where your strengths are and not trying to overwhelm your partner with all of your capabilities and your huge organization, because you may not have all the expertise that they do and may actually break the thing that you just bought. You know, the other aspect I would say where we do probably add some value in a bigger group like ours, we have a lot of experience in human factors engineering. We've built a pretty big group around that, and particularly with combination products and surgical devices, as we see often in sort of ocular delivery technologies, knowing how the user is going to interact with the device and providing that input early on in design can save you from a lot of trouble downstream when you're in clinical trials or even trying to get approvals. So that's probably one place where we did invest a lot, because small companies generally don't have that human factors engineering capability.
Yeah, and I would certainly agree 100% with what Josh is saying. And we were extremely fortunate with our Envisia acquisition that they were physically located just on the other side of a wall from our labs at Aerie. And we literally just had to blow a hole in the wall and put a door in there. And we were able to keep that team physically together, as well as keep the members who were involved in really developing that technology focused on that, even as we integrated them into Aerie. I think that's very important if you're talking about an acquisition. And I think with any discussion with a partner, a smaller biotech company, obviously needs to have the willingness to do early proof of concept work. It's a big ask to expect to go, you know, immediately to talking about a larger deal structure without some data that can be generated in collaboration with the partner to really demonstrate that the technology works the way that the potential licensor needs it to work.
Yeah, no, I think these are all great comments, fully agree. You know, I think the other things I'd add, you know, obviously partnership is critical. We're flexible in terms of our approach, you know, given the unique needs of each program and the unique needs of each partner in terms of how we approach setting those up. I think the other part is that, you know, when we've invested heavily and perhaps acquired a technology, you know, I think as Josh, you alluded, we'll continue to invest and we'll continue to find ways to apply that capability to enable new opportunities. And, you know, an example there is, you know, as we acquired and developed our Novadur platform, our PLGA implant platform, it enabled first a product for the back of the eye. We then continued to adapt and evolve that technology to enable, you know, dosing into the anterior segment as well. Durista is sort of the fruits of that effort. So we will, you know, often continue to invest in the capability over time.
Are there any, I hear from you a lot of talk about the development and the stage of development. Are there any specific challenges with commercialization of a drug device combo in that respect?
Should I start? Sure.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. Floor is yours.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people don't know much about Santen because it was mainly in Asian and European countries. But you have to know that this is a 130 years old company. And only thing we do is ophthalmology, nothing else. We have a big group working, we call it DDS, drug delivery system. And we're also talking with a lot of small companies. One of the examples is we had a deal with a company called Verily under Google.
Google.
Yeah, we have a drug delivery technology there. So it's not that we are in the market, but we are close to something that can be in the market. We are very much, we have a dedicated group that work on the DDS technologies.
And do you foresee any challenges with commercialization of anything that's a drug delivery combo, Reza?
There might be a challenge. As the first one, as mentioned from Jim's group from previous Allergan, is already in the market. But the adaptation will take some time for the doctors and also for the patient. Any drug delivery technology need be very safe. And doctors sometimes like as little as invasive those things are. If they are very much invasive, you know, there is always some kind of blockage, you know. Like, you know, we talked about punctal plug for a long time. You know, many companies came up with the punctal plug, but it's not yet there. It's totally non-invasive, but still is not there because of the how much drug eluted into the surface, you cannot say. It's a very high intake initially, then it slows down. Those kind of things we have to check very carefully, because we don't need too much drug on the surface at a time. Or we don't, you know, one thing we have to come up with some kind of in between, you know, not too much invasive, not too much non-invasive, something in between we need to go for it.
Yeah, in a big pharma company, we're kind of accustomed to handing the drug over, you know, to the clinic and it's done. Basically, mm-hmm. there's no follow-up. But if you're thinking about a complex device, even a surgical technique, now the training burden becomes a lot higher, right? And that's not something we typically see in injectable medications and biopharma. And so I think for our organization, even building that capability in-house, we look to device companies to sort of bring that expertise in. But there's certainly a lot of ophthalmology device companies out there that have that experience. And so I think we've ended up just sort of recruiting that talent over time and building our own team. It's not enough to have a drug that works with these combination products. You know, the user and the surgeon whose hands it's in can really make or break the product in terms of launch, rollout, and successful commercial uptake.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it is going to be a challenge commercially, depending on what is being delivered. Obviously, if you're delivering a drug that's already approved and perhaps is available as a topical eye drop, and using the example of a punctal plug. How well does it have to work relative to the eye drop in order for the payers to pay a premium for that technology, assuming that it will be priced at a premium relative to the eye drop, which oftentimes is, a drug at a generic stage. So I think that has to be taken, very seriously, obviously early on in evaluating programs, because it's, pricing's not going to get any easier. That pressure is not going away.
I completely agree. Demonstrating differentiation and value in a real world setting is key. I'd like to build on some of Josh's comments as well. I think, one of the unique challenges of combination product development is that, these are worlds that traditionally have been very distinct within many large pharma companies. And a combination product is more than the sum of the constituent parts. So, integration is really critical throughout the entire development and commercialization lifecycle. And the earlier the better. I think the other challenge that many of us have encountered over the years is that the engagement starts late sometimes, and we're forced to be reactive because of that. So being, very proactive with that integration and engagement, aligning strategies, aligning, planning, execution is really critical.
Yes, and I will touch base upon timing at a later stage today, so stay tuned. Moving forward, I want to kind of like put a bullseye on your backs, if you wish. So I would like to ask each and every one of you for your strategic key areas of interest. What kind of drug delivery technology would you be interested in looking into? How do those correspond with your existing portfolio? And maybe we should start with Casey. Casey, for Erie, would you, for example, concentrate only on dry eye and glaucoma? Would you want to look at other things as well?
Yes. We have actually initiated programs in retinal disease, specifically AMD and DME, and eventually are planning to pursue glaucoma neuroprotection or neuroenhancement, where we're actually treating the retinal ganglion cells in the back of the eye rather than targeting IOP reduction in the front of the eye. So we have, as I mentioned, I think earlier, dexamethasone-eluting implant that will be going into phase 3 next year. And we have a real kinase small molecule inhibitor implant that just went into the clinic this year. And we expect to have a readout last year that's being tested in both wet AMD and DME. We'll have more data on DME, which is where we're focusing our second stage of development for that product. But I think the key for us, the reason we've gotten into this arena is that we think there is a real opportunity to bring more small molecule chemistry into the back of the eye. Much of what is being developed for treatment of retinal diseases are antibodies and protein therapeutics or aptamers, large molecules that naturally have a longer half-life and can enable injections, you know, once every month, once every other month, maybe once a quarter. But there's only a limited number of targets that are extracellular, and many targets that are intracellular that could be very interesting and potentially very useful in treating these diseases, but you're not going to get a protein therapeutic to those targets. So we really think focusing on bringing small molecule delivery to the back of the eye will open up many more targets for exploration for treating these back of the eye retinal diseases.
So if I hear you correctly, you're not only looking for drug delivery technologies for marketed products as a lifecycle management, you're also looking for those drug delivery technologies for everything that's in development or even at an early stage.
Yes, absolutely. We would look at earlier stages. We'd look at if the small molecule has already been identified by a potential partner, obviously the biological rationale for choosing that target would be very important in deciding whether to collaborate. But yeah, we think with a sustained release delivery system for small molecules, where we can provide a duration of effect of at least 4 months and preferably more like 6 months, really would open up the ability to treat the retinal diseases with multiple therapies, rather than hoping that you can pick the one target or the one product that's going to adequately treat your patient. I think much as we do in glaucoma, where, you know, at least half of the patients are on two, if not three medications. I think to really adequately treat these retinal diseases, which are just as complicated as glaucoma or IOP regulation, ultimately you're going to need to, some patients are going to need more than one target to be engaged at the same time. And that's really going to require infrequent dosing, because we're finally getting there with the anti-VEGFs. Right. You know, potentially once every 3 months, maybe once every 6 months or even longer. And then you're going to, you know, come back with a once a month adjunctive treatment. But that's not going to be very well received. So we think if you're going to try and develop an adjunctive treatment to the current therapies, you better start out with a longer duration product.
Right. Reza, for Santin, since you're developing products in multiple fields, is there a prioritization? Are there fields that you prioritize over others for drug delivery?
So, Sharon, one thing that, you know, as we have every corner, you know, front of the eye, back of the eye, glaucoma, we have drugs are in the pipeline in every sector. We look into DDS drug delivery in each and every one. But our prioritization is always in the back of the eye, a little bit over front of the eye. Is the reason behind it is the injections for the back of the eye, if it's too frequent, is very cumbersome for not only for the patient, but also for the clinics, for the doctors. If you can extend that up to 6 months or more, it would be much better for both the parties, all the caregivers. And for neuroprotection, we are also looking for that. It's not only that we are doing LCMs for old compounds, we are also looking at the new compounds that come into things. But again, for front of the eye group, we're looking for in the dry eye, we're looking for allergy, even for antibiotics, you know, after post-surgical antibiotics, if you give something like contact lens delivery or something that patient does not need to do eye drops every 4 hours, every 5 hours, taking out their shield from the eye, they can be at rest for next 2 weeks with the drug delivery. So everywhere there is a part of drug delivery for patient betterment in their diagnosis and treatment.
That's good to hear. So Jim, AbbVie, considering now you have an enhanced portfolio in between AbbVie and Allergan, How does drug delivery mesh the two together? How does it help you diversify?
Yeah, certainly it brings a lot of, you know, power to our efforts in eye care. And, you know, we continue to invest in, you know, building the pipeline in eye care. Certainly there's expertise that, you know, resides across AbbVie that, you know, relevant and useful, right? You know, specific mechanisms in immunology, you know, in other areas that may be relevant in the eye. So we can now leverage, you know, you know, I think I would agree very much with many of the points that resonated. You know, we continue to invest in delivery capabilities across all of the key, you know, Allergan, eye care areas of interest, retina, glaucoma, dry eye, as well as pharmacologic-based refractive as well. And I'd also, you know, echo what Reza said around the burden of intravitreal injection being, you know, a real significant problem that we continue to work to address.
And Josh, last but not least, is Foresight Vision for a one and done? Are you looking at others? What's next for you?
Well, I mean, there's certainly a tremendous focus on, you know, back of the eye, retinal disease. It's where a lot of the drugs that are in development in our portfolio happen to land. So there's a need for that sort of technology. And we certainly view the Port Delivery System implant as a technology that can be applied to other similar molecules. I mean, there is some customization required, right? Not everything is going to fit into the drug payload or the diffusion ability through that kind of implant. So there has to be some evaluation of that along with heat stability and some other considerations for an indwelling implant. But if I look at the future, I see things like gene therapies that are going to require, you know, very specific local delivery. And, you know, we'd love to give someone an oral medication to solve all their ophthalmology problems, but that's just not practical, right? So I think the direction we're headed is in terms of even greater targeting of the delivery of the things that are in development in our portfolio. So we're seeking technologies that will enable you know, those sorts of local delivery approaches, whether it's the front of the eye, back of the eye, all of that.
Fair enough. So now we're going into the speed dating round. What we will ask of you is not to think too much, but rather shoot. So let's start with, you know, with the same cycle that we started off so far. Would you consider investing in drug delivery platform that is not necessarily take on in existing products? What would be parameters for that? Josh, do you want to be the first one to go?
Sure. And I think the answer is yes, if you can see a match with the future portfolio. So even if something isn't currently, you know, a commercial product or close to commercialization, but you've got a lot of things in the portfolio that would need that technology, we're always trying to predict the future. And absolutely, we would want to invest in those sorts of technologies. I think the key is how much do you invest and how much risk do you take on versus the partner? So we look for partners that have some clinical experience, even if it's not, you know, in a clinical trial, that they have actual clinicians using the product. And it's not just researchers in a lab. You know, if you put 5 PhDs to work for 3 years, you can probably do anything once. We want to see if it's repeatable and if it's, you know, appropriate for the user population. And, you know, there's a solid intellectual property portfolio and some sense of the regulatory limitations. Because early in development, if you're thinking about these things, you can put yourself in a much better position to be successful as a commercial product. So absolutely, we look for the right partners, but there are some parameters around that.
What will be those parameters?
It's the awareness of the field, it's actual experience with use in the clinic or use in the hands of users. So we've had folks bring ideas that have never been seen by an ophthalmologist to treat, you know, a disease of the eye. And as we investigate them a little bit further, I think we realized if an ophthalmologist had handled this product 6 months earlier, they could have avoided a lot of design errors, or they could have avoided a lot of problems that need to be undone as they've advanced their design without user input. So that's why getting some of that preclinical experience or even having the product in the hand of users is really important early on. So if you're missing that, I think alarm bells start to go off when we start assessing a technology like that.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah, and we're also open to technologies that would be focused on something other than the drugs that we're already developing at Aerie. You know, we actually, as I mentioned earlier, with our Envisia acquisition, brought in one of those products from Envisia that was not something that was in our pipeline or even on a radar at the time, but it's worked out very well for us. You know, I think, you know, there's you just have to be willing and even eager to seek out other people's ideas in terms of how to address these various diseases in the retina. So absolutely, we would be open to that.
Yeah, I, you know, just respond by saying our investments in delivery, you know, capabilities are always directed at a specific product opportunity. We don't tend to invest in technology for its own sake. But again, you know, we will then look to adapt and you know, build capability to enable new opportunities as well.
And my response will be always yes. Centen is very open with the new technologies. Our business development group and my group, the OIC, are very involved. We almost talk every week with some companies. You know, we believe in science. It could be preclinical or clinical, doesn't matter. If there's a science and good IP behind it, we'll look into that.
So Reza, would that be the same rationale as Jim and AbbVie, where you would target a drug delivery for a specific product, and the fact that this is a platform is nice to have, but not a necessary thing for you to examine?
It's not nice to have. It should have, actually, to me, because we believe that drug delivery is the future of ophthalmology. You cannot put eye drops all day long. There should be something for both front and back of the eye.
So you would consider a platform a more valuable asset for you than...
Exactly.
That's interesting. That's great. I heard some thoughts from you earlier on with regards to the stage of development with regards to where you're in licensing, and with regards to when in the lifecycle management of your product, you're starting to look for drug delivery technologies. Casey mentioned you're starting very early on with Erie. I'd like to hear your thoughts about the timing. What is a good timing for you to basically in-license those technologies?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it depends what your focus is, what you're trying to accomplish. So, you know, we have had some interest and done some exploration, for example, in intracameral delivery of our Notarcidone molecule, the active ingredient in Ropressa. I think, you know, we began looking at that, you know, within a year or two of launch. I don't think it's ever too early to start considering, are there other things you can do to enhance the utility of a drug for the patients? In our case, the intracameral delivery didn't work very well with that drug because it doesn't diffuse very far from the implant. So you end up getting a very localized effect that's not as effective as the eye drop, which, you know, can target the full 360 degrees of the trabecular meshwork. But I think you can start early in a case like that where you have a product and you're looking at other delivery modalities for it. And then, of course, you know, for back of the eye retinal delivery, in our case with small molecules, you know, we have to pair them from the very outset with a drug delivery technology. If you inject a small molecule in the back of the eye without some sort of sustained release, it'll be gone, you know, within a day or two.
Yeah.
No, I agree with what's been said. I think, you know, new molecules bring risks and, you know, novel delivery technologies bring risks. And so I think a lot of drug delivery tends to happen with molecules that have achieved proof of concept. They may already be approved for other indications. But it really depends on the needs. And, you know, certainly in areas where there's high unmet need, it can be worth, you know, taking the risk to combine a novel molecule with a novel delivery technology.
Reza?
It depends, actually, as Casey mentioned, actually. You know, sometimes we start very early on. Sometimes, or when you start the phase three, we start the drug delivery technology at the same time. So it all depends, actually, you know, how comfortable we are with the drug. And as Jim mentioned, you know, the reason we are doing with the old compound, which approved compound, is that we don't want to take risk on the both end with the new device and the new drug. So at least one part is confirmed that, you know, the drug is approved drug. We know the drug works. Then we can check with the device. if the study failed with the new device and new drug, you don't know which one is failed actually, is it drug or the device? And that's one of the reasons actually everybody's doing with the old approved drug.
Yeah, the delivery technology is something straightforward, like a prefilled syringe, where you're pretty sure it's going to work. Exactly. That's something that probably comes into play, maybe phase 3 or even, you know, post-launch. But I heard a comment earlier that, you know, the half-life, if it's so short, like you can't even keep it in the eye long enough to get proof of concept. And so I think in those cases, absolutely, we would have to invest because we don't want to throw out a good molecule just because there's not a, you know, a reasonable way to deliver it over time, you know, in the right spot of the eye. And, you know, treatment burden is becoming an issue. Ophthalmology capacity, it's in practice is not great. And certainly in the conditions right now with this pandemic, it doesn't get any easier, right? So anything we can do to reduce the number of interactions in the clinic, I think is just going to provide better outcomes for patients in the long term. So this is pretty much being looked at for everything in the portfolio as early as we see kind of a, you know, a phase 1 or phase 2 proof of concept study.
So if I may, there's something to be said about the chicken and the egg here for small companies where if you are starting to, as a reformulating company, you're taking a known drug and reformulates it, there's low valuations for the company, but rather a low risk for you guys to in-license. Well, if you're taking a new molecular entity, then there's high valuation for the company, higher risk, but less of an appetite for you to take it forward. So that's a bit of a chicken and an egg. We'll try to answer this, you know, as a part of, or leave it as an open question for this panel going forward. Jim, did you want to comment on the latter, considering your experience with Foresight Vision 4? Josh?
I think that might be one for me. So if we, I guess, did we buy the chicken or did we buy the egg? I'm not sure, but we have one of them in-house already. So it makes it a lot easier to do the testing with kind of everything that comes through. You know, that was not the case before we saw sort of the proof of concept and saw the successful clinical results. But there are limitations to that technology. I think I mentioned earlier, drug payload may be a concern. Drug molecule stability could be another issue. That makes it a lot easier, but it's also sort of opened the eyes of our researchers to the possibility of doing some of these things. So even if you have a compound that doesn't fit into something like the port delivery system implant, I think we're starting to see our researchers ask questions like, well, hold on, just because I have not an acceptable half-life for injection, what else is out there that I could do? And they've started to look at other technologies and they'll bring questions to our team about, you know, what's feasible, what's not. By getting that dialogue started earlier, we find that we can avoid some of the sort of easy mistakes where maybe the formulation could have been a higher concentration if we had just thought about it a little more carefully at the beginning of development. So we have a chance to influence those things earlier on to maybe make it easier to apply some of these delivery technologies in the future. So screening for heat stability, higher concentration capability, these sorts of things become critical even before you get to phase 1.
So that brings us to the candy or the million-dollar questions around. The chicken and the egg maybe begs for potential frameworks or innovative frameworks for collaboration with those drug delivery technologies. What comes to mind when you're thinking about or considering drug delivery technologies are often platforms and often have to play around with between reformulating and actually working with new molecular entities. Is there a magic formula for collaboration with those small companies? Have you done this? Are you contemplating this? And if you can teach us from your experience with that.
I can jump in maybe. You know, historically, Allergan Eye Care has been very active in partnering and acquiring delivery technologies. And, you know, the deals have ranged from things like, you know, license agreements, you know, to outright acquisition. You know, I mentioned flexibility. So, you know, we like to start with a staged process when we're looking at new technologies. You know, of course, we'll start initially with non-confidential discussions and progress from there. If there's interest mutually to in-depth technical discussions, you know, under CDA, we really like to be able to evaluate technologies in-house under MTA-like agreements because it gives us an opportunity to be hands-on with the technology to sort of, you know, leverage our own disease area expertise as well as non-clinical models that we've developed over time and really understand, you know, what can be achieved with our molecule of interest. Not every company is open to working, you know, in that way, but it is a preferred approach for us. And then again, I think, you know, where you go from there has to be flexible depending on the needs of the situation.
Yeah, and I would agree that a staged approach is really important. You can have a beautiful delivery technology that's been demonstrated, you know, with four or five different types of molecules, and that's no guarantee at all that it's going to work with the next molecule, and particularly with the molecule that your potential partner may be most interested in. So it certainly worked best for us to begin in a very collaborative and focused way, sort of agree what proof of concept looks like. And if we can get over that hurdle, then to engage in discussions around a larger sort of licensing or acquisition possibility. But it's very hard to start the discussions at those points, unless what you're after is a drug device combination that they've already taken into the clinic, basically.
I totally agree with Jim and Casey actually on this thing, because I give you a simple example. Suppose a small company come with a glaucoma drug delivery with timolol, right? We might not be interested in timolol. We look at the platform. We talk to them in depth, actually, because we are very fortunate to have a lot of glaucoma compounds in our pipeline that we think that we can use those things. So that's why the platform technology is very important to me, that whether we can use, because if you have a good pipeline of drugs, you can easily apply to other things. It is not only for one drug. It goes both in front of the eye and back of the eye.
I think we're also seeing like a greater comfort within our organization to let the partner go further in development. So more of a license arrangement rather than trying to bring the technology in-house. The portfolio has probably gotten more diverse over time, and it expanded tremendously. And we just don't have the resources to pursue all these opportunities simultaneously. So I think we'd even look at, funding development in an external partner through later stages of clinical development than perhaps we would have in the past.
Fair enough. And for the last question of the day, what's a holy grail for you? Are all drug delivery technologies created equal? Is there something that you really covet?
No moving parts. No, okay. Seriously, if it can be somewhat independent of the drug molecule and doesn't require some complex chemical process to integrate the drug with the delivery technology, that's certainly going to be easier to leverage across different molecules. But that's not always going to be possible. Many of the formulation-based approaches to long-acting delivery just haven't worked out as well as we had hoped. So we're always looking for things that you can test with the existing compounds and maybe just requires some concentration changes or other minor modifications to an existing compound works.
Yeah, there can't be a single holy grail for delivery to both front and the back of the eye, because the technologies begin typically by targeting a particular tissue, and you pretty much have to begin that way. So that's going to lead to differences in how the technology works. Then you have that complication I was mentioning earlier, particularly with small molecules, where the chemistry and the chemical properties of the molecule you're trying to pair it with can be very different from one molecule to the next. So I certainly agree with Josh, the less complex, the better. But you also have to just be willing to accept some need for collecting empirical data for, exactly what you're interested in.
I think achieving real long-term delivery, especially of things like, proteins in the back of the eye, has been a tough challenge that, many of us have been investing for years and years. Exciting progress in that space. I think the other area that, has been discussed a lot as a holy grail is topical delivery. Could you actually someday, identify solutions that will allow you to deliver topically to the back of the eye? And again, tremendous challenges there, especially for large polar molecules. I'm not holding my breath that we'll see solutions there soon, but, I would hold that up as one holy grail.
I totally agree with Jim. We are thinking about putting drops on the as eye drops, and it will go to the back of the eye. And that challenge will, I don't know when we'll see the result actually, because it's not going there. We know that it's going there, but not at the concentration that it will work. So I don't think that everything will match with the front and back of the eye, although maximum companies are looking for back of the eye right now because of the all the difficulties of giving injections and how long we can sustain the drug into the system. That's the most holy grail now.
Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. This has been fascinating. I've learned a lot. I'm sure our audience as well. I look forward to learning more in future drug delivery showcases. And I want to thank you for your time and effort. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening in. And many thanks to our esteemed panelists for participating in this week's conversation. We appreciate your time. As we wrap 2020, don't forget to register for the OIS Year in Review, where we will take a look back at the year's most notable deals and approvals, brought to you by the best and brightest clinical thought leaders and industry executives. OIS's Year in Review is taking place on December 9th from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. You can see more information on our site, OIS.net. We will see you next week.